Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, November 29th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we push through the hump day blues here this week. Two guests will join me. The first, Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. The second, Wes Reynolds. You know him from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds. And the number one, we're going to chat college football, NFL, and NBA here on today's program. Before we get into that, a couple things I want to bring to your attention. Over at bangthebook.com, Parker Michaels, is doing a fantastic job with his daily NHL write-ups. Please make sure that you check those out. Getting a lot of positive feedback from some of the heavier hitters in the online NHL betting community. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what they think of his work, and obviously we're very happy with his work as well. So please check those out. See what he has to say. Very detailed game breakdowns. His model incorporates individual players, so this is a lot of hard work that he's doing, and we're very lucky to have it over there at bangthebook.com. Also, we'll have all 16 college football games previewed here for this week, all 16 NFL games previewed for this week, all the NBA games every day, all the NHL games every day, and a large selection of college basketball matchups as well. So we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information over at bangthebook.com. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up over at DSI using that promo code BTB and the number 25, you get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here today. The first, Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Good morning. Everything's going great. Good to talk to you.
All right. Well, we're at conference championship week here in college football. So 16 games, as I mentioned there a second ago, a lot of them in the Sun Belt for the regular season, Louisiana, Monroe, and Florida State for the Seminoles extending their bowl streak. But otherwise, it's conference championships. And we know that sharp bettors such as yourself want to look for value in some of those games that aren't getting a whole lot of press. Unfortunately, the games this week are getting a lot of press. So do you have a lightened workload this week, or do you just have to dig a little bit harder to try and find some edges?
Well, that's the thing is when you've got less games to play as opposed to what you have on a regular schedule, if you do your later workload, you're probably not going to have the advantage that you normally have. This is the one week, and you know, I used to do this all the time when I had a lot of success in the NBA, was I would read every paper from every team. Well, you know, during a college football and obviously a college basketball, you just can't do that. But this is the week when you've got a lesser amount of games, and we know enough about the NFL right now, so you don't need to do as much work on the NFL as the season goes on, and there's so much information out there for the NFL. You do have to do it for the college, and you need to be able to read the newspapers. And unfortunately, you know, half of the games are the Sun Belt, as you pointed out, and it's tougher to get the information for the Sun Belt because they're not highly reported. But, yeah, you got to do a little bit more work, even though there's lesser games. You got to go a little bit more deeper.
Now, here's something that we've talked about in the past here, and we'll touch on this briefly and then take a look at the MAC championship game. The fact that you sell premium selection, the fact that you have clients, you know, a lot of times – people want to bet these big games. They're on TV. They're going to watch them. They want to have action on them. We've talked about this in the past, but I want to touch on it again here with this year with conference championships. And, of course, as we head into bowl season where you're going to have some very significant bowl games, do you feel additional pressure to put something out because these games are so high profile?
Well, I've been in doing this for 35 years or so my customers know that if it's not a game I'm betting, I'm not going to release it. So I'm only trying to bet what I have an advantage on. You know, for a bowl season, you know, there's some guys that will put out games on every single bowl game, and which is fine if they're actually betting every single bowl game. But to be honest with you, unless you're a degenerate in this industry, you are not putting all your money on every games that you don't have an edge on. You'll never be profitable. So if you wouldn't do it yourself, I don't know how you could do it for your clients. So you just have to let your clients know if they're a guy that wants a lot of volume, you're probably not the guy that they want. If you want somebody who's going to pick out and choose the best plays, then that would be me or some other guys out there. So, you know, everybody does something a little bit different. That's always what I've done. I've had more success, smaller amount of plays, and I've never really done the, you know, I pass a lot of Monday Night Footballs and things like that. You know, guys are going to bet it anyway, but, you know, if my opinion is no better than theirs, then why would I charge something for that? So, it's as long as the client knows going in what your philosophy is on it all, I think he chooses whoever he thinks works out best for him.
All right, well, you are an expert in the Mid-American Conference, so that's where we'll go here this week and then focus on the NFL with you. Akron takes on Toledo, and you and I were talking about this game a little bit last night in terms of the fact that you don't see 21-point spreads in conference championship games. And you know, this is one where it feels like the number is high, but then as you start breaking down these two teams and compare the body of work, I mean, it seems like it's justified.
Yeah, the line opened, I believe, at the win at 18, now up to 21, so they're taking money on Toledo. It's in the dome, fast track. I mean, that's obviously going to help Toledo. But you go back and you look, they played once before, and the line was 15 at Toledo. So if you take out their home field of probably 3.5 of the Glass Dome, we're looking at 11.5 a month ago, and the line's 10 points, 9.5 points higher on a neutral now than it was then. So I don't know why that is. What has changed? I know that Akron's had quarterback injuries, but the backup quarterback to me has looked just as good as the starter. The Akron defense, sure, they've struggled at times, and you know, they give up 48 to Toledo, and they did lose that game at Toledo by 27. But they were off. That was the second straight back-to-back road game, and they just beat a conference champion Western Michigan the week before. So it definitely would have been a letdown spot for Akron against Toledo in that one. But you know, I keep track of the first half numbers, and Toledo outgained them 8.7 to 3.8. So that was no doubt they were winning 24-7 at the half. Toledo was definitely the better team that night. As I pointed out, the spot wasn't that great for Akron. But now off of that, and a month later, do you make a 9.5-point differential? I'm having a hard time buying into it. If I had to play this, it would be the Akron side. I only made a 16, so I didn't make it much difference from what it was before. 2.5-point differential, they made it 9.5. So Toledo did expect to be here. Akron, maybe they're thinking Akron's fat and happy to be able to get here. They've been here before. They lost the championship, or they won the championship, I believe, last time in 2012, I believe Akron was there. So Akron is a team that's made pretty good money on the season. They've covered, 8 of their last 9 games. It's rare that you see a line move against a team that's been on a hot run like that. Maybe there's going to be some buyback. I don't know. I thought maybe there'd be some already. It's already at 21.5 at the sharper book. So the wise guys are telling you that the Toledo side is the way to go in this game, at least the early money. I'm kind of leaning the other way at this point.
Well, that's what's so interesting about this game is that, you know, you have another game on the board that was a blowout between North Texas and Florida Atlantic, and that number is sitting out there at 11 in Boca Raton. And when those two teams played earlier on in the year, Florida Atlantic was only a 3.5-point favorite. So another game where we saw a big adjustment, pretty much based on a one-game sample size, and both of the dogs in those two games, North Texas and Akron, in really bad spots. That North Texas spot, as I mentioned earlier in the week here on the show, one of the worst ones of the season with a huge comeback win, last-second touchdown pass, quarterback took a beating, all that type of thing. The Toledo game, as you mentioned, back-to-back road games, plus that Western Michigan game had to be pushed from Saturday to Sunday because the field flooded in Kalamazoo. So it's hard because everything in us as a handicapper, and we'll talk about this on the NFL side here in a minute, everything in us, you know, looks for these types of things where you've got probably an overvalue in the line, an overadjustment in the line, and it can be really frustrating to not be able to play those.
Yeah, it's Akron's 5-5 against FBS opponents. They lost to Penn State. They lost to Iowa State. They lost to Troy. They lost to Toledo. And then they lost that game to Miami of Ohio. They did get the cover in that game. But this is a team. They're 5-5 against FBS teams. They were only favored in two of those games all season long, against Ball State by 4.5 and against Bowling Green by 3. So Akron's been a very good dog all season long. And they're going to come into this game with confidence. That, you know, obviously they got blown out last time they played Toledo, but I think they're going to be ready, play a good game here. And, you know, Toledo, just keep in mind, Toledo just a couple weeks ago were at Bowling Green and they were laying 17.5. They were at Ohio, who didn't even win the conference 3 weeks ago, or actually 4 weeks ago now, and they laid 3. 3 at Ohio, so the line, the neutral line is probably 6. Now they're playing the conference champion that beat Ohio in that division, and they're laying 15 points more. There's a reason out there somewhere. I just haven't come across it yet, and at this point, I don't want any part of Toledo laying that number. You could have great numbers with Toledo. They were laying Northern Illinois at home at 8, and now they're laying, you know, 21.5 against a similar Akron team. So, yeah, to me, it's the dog and nothing right now. Unless I do a little bit more work and find something else out. But, yeah, it's going to have to be a pretty good reason.
Well, and then you run into kind of a thing, you know, we just talked about this point a little bit about extra added pressure to possibly put something out here on conference championship weekend. That's the difference between being, you know, a pick seller and a personal bettor, is that if you want to play this game but don't want to sell it, at least you have that luxury. And then you've kind of talked with our listeners here that you feel like Akron is the value side. Do you have a buy point in mind? I mean, does this thing have to get higher for you to get more confident in it? Because it's like we're talking about key numbers or anything.
No, it's already gone over the 21.5. 23 would be the next one I'm looking for. But at this point, it's more reading into the what's going on, making sure everybody's going to play. So the numbers where I'd love it. I mean, at that point, it's just that I need to go back and double check and make sure that I haven't missed key injuries or something of that fact. Maybe I haven't seen the center for Akron is injured or something to that effect, or maybe the kicker's out or something that I normally wouldn't be something that I was going to look for. I don't see the love for Toledo in this game, and Toledo can come out and blow them out. I mean, like I said, they beat them by 27 at home, but we're looking for value. And when you're trying to find something like that, you're trying to find something that has at least a 53% chance of covering. And at this point, you know, to me, Akron clearly at that number has a better than 53% chance of covering if everybody is healthy. So just one of those games that you're going to have to read the practice reports.
One more thing I'll ask you about here, and this is kind of a general point about conference championship games, but we can factor it into this one. You know, you got Miami and Clemson and Charlotte. You've got Ohio State, you know, I think it's a 2.5-hour drive from Indianapolis. You have some of these teams, Georgia, you know, they're not in Atlanta, but they're in Athens. They're at least in the state. You have some of these teams that are playing in close proximity to where their campuses are located. Toledo, obviously much closer to Detroit than Akron is, but Akron's only another 1.5 hours or so away from there. So what do you do about, you know, this pseudo home field type thing in these conference championship games? Does it factor in the line for you?
I think it depends. It depends on if the teams have played at this site before. The MAC Championship's been at the Ford Field for years, and both teams have played there. I know when Akron played there, obviously it was a decade ago, so none of these kids were there. Toledo's one of those teams that plays there, so they're a little bit more familiar with it. And as you mentioned, it's basically right across the state line there in Detroit. So you would have to give them a slight edge. But a lot of it would have to be on who's played here before. You see that a lot where you've got a team that's been, especially if it's at a place where, for example, let's use Las Vegas. Las Vegas Bowl is usually a team from the Mountain West against a team from the Pac-12. And if a team from the Pac-12 hasn't been to Vegas in a long time, they're going to be a lot more excited than a team, you know, that already plays one game a season or one game every two seasons in Las Vegas. So it would have a little bit more meaning there. I think you have to take it on a game-to-game basis. Some teams are very good travelers. Miami this year, Toledo went to Nevada, and Nevada's been so up and down this year, and they win that game by 13. Then they go to Miami and actually were winning at the half, and then they got crushed. But, they've had a lot of success on the road other than the loss to Ohio, and we've talked about that was a game that Toledo thought they were going to play Ohio, and they didn't want to show much, and obviously that didn't turn out so well for Toledo. They got crushed and ended up not playing Ohio anyway, so... But you got to take a look at how these teams do when they're playing on the road in big games, and both of these teams have done pretty well.
All right, let's move over to the NFL side here, and we actually have a pretty good NFL card this week. Several games that I'm intrigued about, even some of the games that feature some of the bottom feeders, kind of interesting. San Francisco, Chicago, Jimmy Garoppolo going for the 49ers. The Bears, do they play for John Fox? Because it certainly didn't feel like they played last week. Maybe Philadelphia is just that good, and we'll talk about the Eagles here in a little bit. In terms of looking at the overall NFL card here, there are a few games I want to touch on with you, Brian. Let's start with this Chiefs versus Jets game. Interesting line move in this one. The Jets opened 5, down to 3 with extra juice. There are a couple 3.5s out there as well. And you and I were talking about this team a little bit yesterday in that I feel like I haven't seen a team fall this far, this quickly, like the Kansas City Chiefs have done over the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah. I knew Kansas City wasn't quite as good as what they were, but the drop-off has been pretty big. The quarterback Alex Smith on field, and the team made the adjustments around it. And the first part of the season, it wasn't a big deal, but as the year goes on and they get more film on Kansas City and realize that he doesn't throw the ball, doesn't have the ability to throw the ball downfield, it shortens the field. The defensive players don't have to worry about the long passes, and Kansas City is, obviously struggling in that regard. But I do like Alex Smith. He's a guy, they call him a game manager. I don't care what you call him. He's a guy that doesn't turn the ball over to me. And that's something that's really big. And, you look at how, I've got everything broken down by the first halves, but you look at turnovers. In that first game against New England, they lost a turnover battle in the first half by 1. Every game since then, they've never been in a deficit. Even the games lately, they haven't been in a deficit in turnover. So when you go into the second half, we all know that if you lose the turnover battle, it's about 76% of the time, maybe even higher, that the team loses the game. So they're going into the half and they're basically playing their game in the first half. Now, when it gets to the second half and they're behind, that's when they get in trouble. And, the last couple of weeks, the last 3 weeks, they were down 13-3 to Buffalo, 6-3 to the Giants, 14-10 to Dallas. So those are three teams that, not the greatest teams, obviously, but there were three games in which Kansas City was behind, which takes them out of their comfort zone, which means the second half of the game, they have to throw the football a little bit more, do things they don't feel as strongly about, and that's where they've gotten in trouble. The games before that, beginning of the year, the first three games, they were up or right there in the game within 3 points. First five games of the season, they were never trailing by more than 3 points at the half. So Kansas City's one of those teams that if you like to play second-half football, it's a team you don't want to back when they're behind in a game. And obviously that is something that's worked out once again this year. But you're right. It's the team that the second half of the season, basically, they've gotten their best players have been shut down. Obviously, the running back from Toledo that got such a great pub earlier in the season, he has done nothing at that point going forward after looking so good early on. And it's a team you know what you're getting out of Kansas City for the most part. If they've got the lead and playing their game, they look good. If they're from behind and they've got to do things that they normally don't do, they struggle.
Yeah, and maybe it is that cut and dry. And that's been one of the problems for me this year with the NFL is that, a lot of the things that you've done in the past, a lot of the things that you expect to work, fading teams that look like they've reached a peak in terms of their lines or, back-to-back road games, bad travel spots, this and that. A lot of times these things just haven't worked out this season. And with Kansas City, they were a team I did try to fade a couple of times early on, just because I was looking at that body of work and saying, okay, this isn't sustainable. And I was a little bit too early with doing that, which is frustrating. But then you look at last week losing outright to Buffalo. I know you had the Bills last week, which was a great call by you. So then this week, they're only a three-and-a-half-point favorite against the Jets team that was supposed to win, what, four games this year, three games this year? So it's very interesting to see, you know, how the stock market, so to speak, of this team has just fallen off so dramatically. So the question here, is this the right line move? I mean, should this number have gone down? And is there any value left on taking the home dog?
I think so. The Jets have really impressed me all season long. Obviously, nobody thought much of them. But they continue to go out there and give it all every game. Last 2 weeks, they lose to Tampa Bay 15-10 before the bye, and then the Carolina 35-27. I had Carolina last week, and I was lucky to win that game as I thought they were outplayed in that contest. But they were able to get that last field goal and cover the number of Carolina. But, yeah, the Jets are a team that continues to play hard. And as a sports fan, as a sports bettor, you want teams that are giving it all every week, especially if they're in the underdog role and don't win many games. We've seen all the wise guys last year on the Browns continually put money on them. The Jets are that kind of team this year that nobody gives them any credit. But you go back and you look over their schedule, you know, the only 10 games they haven't covered was against Buffalo in the opener, Oakland the game after that, and then the last two games against Tampa and Carolina. They had a nice string before that where they're covering against everybody, including the New England Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons, two playoff teams, Jacksonville also. So this is a team in the Jets. They're not impressive. The offense does just what it needs to do, but that defense has held them in there all season long. And you know what you're going to get out of the Jets. And like I said, you pretty much know what you're going to get out of Kansas City. This is a game I'm looking to play the Jets here. This is one of the games that I've got circled. I haven't bet it yet. But there's still some 3.5s out there. There's some 3s. So unless there's a whole ton of money comes in and paints the screen black, you should be able to get 3.5 here on the Jets.
That's what I was going to ask you about is, you know, the Chiefs were such a public team early on in the year because they were doing so well. I mean, you had, you know, those guys having big fantasy games, and that kind of drives the public betting market a little bit as well. So that's what I was kind of wondering is, where do you think this – do you think this number maybe touches back up to 4? Do you think that, you know, we might just get 3.5 flats, the best we're going to do?
There's a better – well – right now, the sharper books are sitting at like 3-119 for Pinnacle, 3-118 for Chris. So they're right there toggling between the two, 3 and 3.5. If you take a look at most of the books, South Point 3.5. So they don't shade anything. South Point is 110 no matter what they put up there. That's their policy. So it's basically 3.25, as they say, and I'm not so sure it's going to change much. I don't see a lot of people coming in to play the Jets. The general public probably won't come in to play the Jets. It's probably not a game the general public's really looking at, I wouldn't think, is especially if from the Kansas City side, because they just haven't been able to make any money on them. And guys like to bet on whoever's been good to them lately. So that's the thing in this one is I don't think it's going to move. So we're in no reason to go out and bet it right now, but the 3 obviously means a whole lot more than the 4. So if you're a Jets fan and you want to play the Jets here, obviously, as soon as it moves, if it moves anything from 3.5 to 3, you just want to jump on it. I wouldn't wait around for the 4.
All right, let's slide down the board a couple spots here to game 373, 374. The Rams take on the Cardinals. Rams laying a touchdown here in the desert in this spot. And I think this is a very interesting line, and I want to get your thoughts on this because I think that there's clear value on one of these teams here in this game, and that's the Arizona Cardinals. It feels to me like the Rams win over the Saints last week, getting a lot more respect in the betting market than Arizona's win over Jacksonville, and I'm not sure that that's a fair assessment for the books to make here because, you know, I get it. Jacksonville is a team that needs to learn how to win consistently, needs to learn, you know, how to live up to some new expectations. The Saints are traveling cross-country as a team that had covered, what, 7 or 8 in a row? Like, one of those was coming for them. So, I don't know, I feel like this line is mispriced by at least a full point, if not more.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of the other games I've got. I've got six games that I've got circled here to do a little bit more work on, and Arizona was one of them. And one of the things I take a look at, and it's not a be all end all, but I take a look at the explosive plays. Arizona's plus 10 on the season, and the Rams are plus 6. Now, who would have ever thought that? This Arizona team is one of those teams defensively. They've only given up 34 plays all season long of 20 yards or more, and that's really what the Rams try to do. They've got 53 of their own on the season, so the Rams are trying to get that big explosive play against you. And, you know, you take a look at Minnesota. They played them, you know, 2 weeks ago and really shut down. They only had two explosive plays. Last time they played Arizona, they only had one explosive play in that game. Now, obviously, they were up 30. They win the game 33-0, up 23-0 at the half. So they built their lead and then just ran the ball the rest of the game. But that's one of the drawbacks about following explosive plays, because the Browns have actually got a pretty good number of explosive plays. But that just means that they're behind in the game and got to throw all the time. But when you've got teams around the 500 mark like the Arizona is, that's usually not the case. And, you know, they've got the shutout revenge from earlier in the season. And if you take a look at the games that they have played, obviously they lose to Dallas on Monday Night Football by 11. And that was the game that it was clear that they could not throw the football. They had some injuries there and weren't able to do it. Offensive line injuries back then were a major concern, and I think that was the telling sign in that one, because I bet that in live betting. But then they play San Francisco at home. They beat them. They play Tampa at home. They beat them. They played Seattle. They only lose by 6 at home against Seattle. And then Jacksonville last week, plus, you know, 3-point win. So that's a pretty good resume playing at home. And, you know, you're looking at the Rams. They go on the road, and, they beat Dallas by 5. They beat San Francisco by 2. Beat Jacksonville by 10 is probably a good win for them. And then, obviously, they played the Giants there and crushed the Giants, which a lot of people have done this season. And then they lose to Minnesota. So they played pretty well on the road, but they've done basically what you thought they would do. It's too high for me. Jacksonville, Arizona was getting plus 6 last week against Seattle. They're getting plus 6.5 against the Rams. They're getting 7. I think there's some value here on Arizona.
All right, one more game I want to touch on with you here, and we'll go to Sunday Night Football, excuse me, for this one. The Philadelphia Eagles are now up to a 6-point favorite at both DSI and Bookmaker, 6 at Bovada and my bookie, some 5.5s out there, but also some 5s at Pinnacle and the Greek, which is interesting. And then we talk about looking for context clues in the lines. You can also do that by looking at what lines are available at what sports books. But you've got this Philadelphia team that just looks, they look like the Alabama of the NFL. You know, they're just winning methodically, taking care of business. Oh, and they're covering basically every number you throw at them. Doesn't matter what the steam is. Doesn't matter that there's an inflation on the price. Philadelphia's covering regardless. Here we see them pumped up from a minus 3 with extra juice favorite or some 3.5s out there up into this 5.5-6 range for game 377, 378. And I don't know what to do with this game, Brian. I mean, Seattle seems like a misleading – you know, it seems like a misleading record that the Seahawks have this year, because, you know, all the talk is about the Seahawks not doing this right, the Seahawks not doing that right. Well, they are still a 7-4 football team right now and in a position to make the playoffs, but now they're getting 5.5-6 at home. Can you step in front of this Eagles train?
You know, it's funny when you take a look at Seattle playing at home and obviously the 12th man and the whole bit. They were a pick 'em when they played Atlanta a couple weeks ago, and they – at home and they lose by 3, but Seattle hasn't been a home underdog since all the way back in 2012, and they were 3-0 against the spread in that regard that season. So this is a rarity you see here with Seattle. All the stats show Philadelphia, and I agree with all this. I think Philadelphia, to me, is the most well-rounded team in the NFL. You look at Seattle first half defense. The first game of the season, they win 16-14 first half against Washington. Since then, they have not allowed more than 10 points in the first half in any game all season long. That defense has just been terrific. But they do have an easy schedule after this game. They play the Giants, Oakland on Monday Night Football at home, and then Dallas. So this could be a show-me game for Philadelphia to go into Seattle. But when you take a look at what their record is this season, they're just so far ahead of everybody else that they're already basically in the playoffs. Nobody else in their division is even making a run at them. What is the importance of this game? It, like I said, it could be the show me game that they want, and then after that can coast through the rest of the season. Or it could be that right now they're worried about resting some of their players and getting some guys healthy. Whereas Seattle, you know, they did pull out the win last week against San Francisco, but this is a team, Seattle needs every win they possibly can get the rest of the season. After they play Philadelphia here, really tough schedule. They play Philadelphia at home. They go on the road to Jacksonville, and then they got to play the Rams at home, finish the season with Dallas and Arizona. So if you're looking at it from which team needs it more, it's obviously Seattle. And as I pointed out, they haven't been a home dog since 2012. So this is one of those games I'm going to probably play in-game as opposed to earlier, because I don't know the mental state of Philadelphia and how they're going to treat this game. I know what I'm going to get out of Seattle. They've got a lot of injuries, but this is their season here. If they lose this game, this is really going to hurt them in trying to get to the playoffs. They need to be able to prove that they can beat a team like Philadelphia. So maybe Philadelphia does come in here and say, this is the one game we want to show, because they just put, you know, they came out of the bye and they played Dallas and Chicago. That was no competition. And going into the bye, they played San Francisco and Denver. So they haven't really had a major game, a show me game, since they played Carolina back on October 12th. So they've been very fortunate where they haven't had to get up for these teams. Well, will they get up for Seattle, or how are they going to treat it? Rather than guess how that's going to happen ahead of time, I think I would rather watch the game and see how it comes out that way and be able to make some adjustments and make some bets at that point.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of things you said here on today's show, as always, made a lot of sense. Great insights from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. What's going on over there at WagerTalk right now, Brian?
Yeah, we're on a real hot run in just about every sport we've been on. If you've been following us on Twitter, at B. Leonard Sports, I've been tweeting out our second half plays, and those have been on a nice little run for us the last couple of weeks. So, follow us on Twitter, and I always tweet out anything that I think is pertinent. Sometimes I'll tweet out something that I think is funny, and I don't put out a lot of stuff into your timeline, so you don't have to worry about that. But, getting a lot of positive response back on Twitter from sending out those plays.
Well, Brian, always a treat, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Best of luck to everyone.
Good stuff there on today's show from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. One more guest to come your way here on this Wednesday edition of the show. It's time for our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Appreciate your time, as always, to join us here, sir. We're going to talk some NBA and some NFL with Wes. You can find his work on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, let's go ahead and start with this Thursday night game here. Washington and Dallas. We'll go ahead and dive right in. And, you know, I was surprised when this number opened with Dallas a favorite, albeit just a one-point favorite. And then we saw the number go up to 1.5. Now it's flipped, where Washington's a 1.5-point favorite. I sort of feel like this is where the number should have been all along. Do you have any idea why the books would open Dallas the favorite, given how they've looked the last few weeks?
You know, I'm not sure why. I mean, it's no surprise that it's moved to where it is right now, because if you look, both these teams were obviously in the national TV Thanksgiving games, and Dallas looked awful, and Washington really wasn't great. I think it was kind of the Giants' ineptitude more than anything in that game. But it's no surprise the line has moved this way. And looking at the Redskins this year, they've probably actually been a better team on the road than they've been at home at FedEx Field. If you look at some of their efforts on the road, they were relatively competitive with Philadelphia. When nobody, I mean, in comparison to kind of their contemporaries of other teams, I mean, they weren't really blown out on Monday night at Philadelphia. They should have probably won at Kansas City if Josh Doctson catches that pass with about a minute to go at Kansas City. They had a big lead at New Orleans that they ended up losing in overtime, but they were pretty much covering and winning the whole way. They went out and won at Seattle. So I mean, the Redskins have really, I think, had some of their better efforts on the road this year. And meanwhile, looking at Dallas, they've had two really embarrassing performances on national TV. They were humiliated at home on Sunday night by the Eagles, just like everybody else has been as of late. And then the performance on Thanksgiving, where they really seem to get nothing going. And I mean, you know, you lose Ezekiel Elliott for the suspension. You have some various injuries on the offensive line. Looks like Tyron Smith is going to play, but Zach Martin is questionable. He's in concussion protocol. Leo Collins is questionable. The defense looks absolutely lost without Sean Lee. And I think if you look at their receiving game, I mean, I think Witten is still their most consistent receiving threat. I don't think Dak has the chemistry with him that Romo did. But, you know, they're I guess, a receiver is Dez Bryant. But, you know, Dez Bryant's not really gaining separation from defensive backs anymore. So they're just lacking any type of big play threat. And I think, you know, Dallas looks relatively ordinary lately. And actually the last 2 weeks have been less than ordinary and they've been pretty bad. So no surprise that this has moved this way. I mean, if I were looking to probably bet the game, you know, I would probably want to maybe tease Dallas up through the 3 and the 7 with maybe a Sunday game, because I still think that there could be value there with Dallas as a home dog taking, over 7. But it's tough to really make a case to take them straight up based on what we've seen lately.
So, you know, what's really interesting and what my thought process was, I don't think I conveyed it properly at the top of the segment here, but with Dallas opening a favorite, like, people always talk about trap games in the market. People always talk about, you know, the odds makers sort of playing games with you, because they had to know that sharp money would hit the board on Washington early in the week, because Dallas is not a team that should be favored over anybody right now, except for probably the Browns, the 49ers, you know, some of those types of teams, the real bottom feeders. Washington doesn't have a great record, but Washington has a lot of personnel. You know, they have a good quarterback in Kirk Cousins, which goes a long way in today's NFL. So the books had to know that they were getting Washington money here, and it seems like they weren't worried about it, which is something that's kind of sounding alarm bells for me.
Yeah, I think so, too. And looking at Washington, has their fair share of injuries on defense. I mean, maybe no stars like Dallas has, but in terms of their depth on the defensive line, a little bit on the offensive line as well, with Trent Williams, still not ruled in for the Thursday night game. So, you know, Washington's been banged up a little bit too, and I think maybe the books also didn't believe in Washington a ton either. I mean, looking at that performance on Thursday night, I mean, they weren't really ever losing the game, I don't believe. But, I mean, they couldn't get away from the Giants, who could do absolutely nothing on offense, who have no running game, who have receivers that drop passes, who have a poor offensive line, and they really couldn't get away from the Giants. So, you know, I think you have two teams here that don't inspire, I guess, a lot of belief, in the market. So this is actually, I think, a really tough game.
All right, let's look ahead to Sunday here, and let's talk about game 355-356, the Minnesota Vikings on the road against the Atlanta Falcons. Vikings getting 3 here in this spot. And, you know, Wes, we've talked about it a lot here on our segments and on the Super Contest segments when you've filled in for us. There's just so many bad games. Lots of times they're just awful games. Last week's card was terrible. You had multiple double-digit favorites. This week you've got some good games. You've got this Minnesota-Atlanta game, which is a really good one. I think a lot of people sort of feel like Atlanta's turned that corner with 3 straight wins and 3 straight covers. But Minnesota, I mean, how good has this team been? They've covered six straight. What do you think about this line? I mean, is this line where it should be? Do you feel like there's an edge to be had in this game?
I think this is probably where it should be. I mean, because looking right now, I mean, Minnesota, I think, perhaps has that look maybe a little bit of a public underdog here because, I mean, they're a 9-2 team getting points. So, I mean, you got to think that more of the betting public, who's been obviously doing very well in the NFL the past several weeks with all these favorites that keep coming in week after week, but they have a look of a dog that I think will see support in the market from the betting public. Atlanta last week, it was kind of a deviation from their pattern because they actually really started well against Tampa Bay, and then Tampa Bay came back and made it a game, and then Atlanta, somehow covers at the end of the game, which was kind of a little bit of a tough beat for Buccaneer backers the way that game closed. But this is also a tough one because, you got to love Minnesota's defense and the fact that they've kind of been able to keep it together. I mean, they have Bridgewater back healthy to go, but they really haven't had to play him because they keep winning, and Case Keenum has done a good job, so they really haven't had the need to rush him back. And then Atlanta, you're kind of seeing that, hey, this is the Atlanta Falcons team that we expected, that was the Super Bowl contender because they started out so awful, and now they're starting to win games. So I think this is another tough game. I mean, I think it's a very good one. It's not some of the games we've talked about in the Super Contest segments where it was like, oh gosh, what do we do here? But this is a little bit of a what do we do here game because you can make a convincing case, I think, for either side here, and I haven't determined which case I'm going to make or which side I'm going to particularly choose here, just because, I think the line is probably where it should be. I mean, if it's three and if Atlanta has the standard home field advantage, and I think it could be higher because in big games, that stadium is going to get loud. I think this is, basically kind of a pick'em game here.
Well, and a lot of times when I find games that I like that I'm going to follow, but I don't necessarily have an opinion on, I like to follow them so that I can maybe pick up something down the line a little bit. Now, I will say that this isn't the greatest of spots for Atlanta. Coming off of a division game against Tampa Bay, they played Minnesota here, and then they played New Orleans on a short week on December 7th. So it's kind of that divisional sandwich spot, and we'll see, how the Falcons handle that. But one of the problems that I have with this game, and this is going to be an issue – all week long pretty much in the NFL, is that because we've seen these teams play so many bad teams, because there are so many bad teams in the NFL, it's been really hard to gauge what these performances actually mean. In a spot like this, you never want to overreact to one game, but at the same time, these are two really good teams. So if one team shows out here in this spot, there's going to be that inflation, there's going to be that recency bias, and I think that's a really challenging thing here about this game as well, is that I think you're going to find out a lot about both of these teams, but I don't know how relevant it is to the future because it may have just been a one-off thing because they're actually playing somebody.
Yeah, I agree as well. And I think you have, both of these teams look like they're going to be playoff teams. I mean, especially Minnesota. I mean, nobody is really close to them in the division. I mean, it's a three-game lead with five to play. So, I mean, you got to think this team's going to be there. The AFC South is a little bit more competitive. I mean, Atlanta is actually in third place in the AFC South, or the NFC South, I'm sorry, behind two teams that play each other this week with Carolina and New Orleans. So, I mean, Atlanta probably, if you look at that in terms of a division race, probably needs the game more. But then again, Minnesota's only one game out from home field advantage with Philadelphia. So, I mean, but for the division race, you've got to think that, you know, this is kind of this where Atlanta needs to make a stand here if they want to keep pace.
One more NFL game that we're going to touch on here, and then we'll take a look at the NBA side of things for a few minutes. You just mentioned this game. Carolina takes on New Orleans. And I just talked about how the Rams seem like they got a nice little inflation for beating New Orleans last week. I think that number against Arizona is a little bit high. In this spot here, it seems like the loss for New Orleans hasn't really deterred anybody. They're a 4.5-point favorite here in this spot. A lot of books showing 4.5 now after the opener of 4 flat. And it just sort of has the look to me like people are – willing to completely bypass New Orleans' loss last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think that was actually one game I did win in the NFL card last week with the Rams. I mean, I just thought that was a good spot after they had taken their licking in Minnesota. And then New Orleans just looked kind of ready to lose one. I mean, they had a couple close wins, and, you know, they had gotten – home and happy kind of, and then they had to go on the road semi across country, and you know, the Rams I don't think really beat them down, but they pretty much had control of the game from the get-go. And now you have Carolina coming in. Now it seems like a lot of the early money has been on the Saints, but the line really hasn't moved. I mean, and Carolina is one of those teams that may be getting some recency bias favoritism here, and the fact that they've covered their last few games. They had that impressive performance against Miami on Monday night. They go to the Jets and somehow cover, even though I think that the Jets really were, you know, right there covering the game the whole way. They just had bad circumstances kind of get them. You know, New Orleans is always tough at home. This would be something maybe I would look at, perhaps if I don't want to lay the 4, maybe laying money line and maybe parlaying it with a big favorite that you might feel, you know, this is a smallest favorite, parlayed it with a big favorite that you might feel confident about, perhaps Jacksonville or perhaps the Raiders. Something like that. But, you know, haven't made a determination yet in terms of where I'm going to go. But, I mean, my lean would be with New Orleans simply because I think that they're actually the better team. And I think being at home, you know, we talk a lot about home field advantages in the league, and some are higher than others. We know that Seattle's is really high. We know that Denver's is really high for the altitude, and probably one of the top 5 or 6 home field advantages in the league is New Orleans, because that place gets very loud, especially when they're running well. And I think, you know, the Saints would be one of those teams that I would have above the standard 3-point home field advantage. So they would be my lean for this game.
One final thing I want to ask you about in the NFL. You mentioned maybe using Oakland as a money line parlay piece here this week. I know the line didn't move based on the announcement of Geno Smith being the starter, which kind of gives you an idea of what Eli Manning is right now and what Eli Manning has done this season. But that entire situation, it just looks so bad to me. I mean, Ben McAdoo is not going to keep that job. He's going to be fired. There's no doubt about it. And to sit down a franchise icon like that with a long games played streak, if you want to go to Davis Webb and see what you've got in him, okay, fine, maybe I get it. We all know what Geno Smith is, and Geno Smith's not going to be a Giant next year anyway. It's awful. It's one of the worst treatments of a player that I've seen in quite some time. You know, I mean, outside of, you know, players doing something to get themselves in trouble or whatever. It's inexcusable to me. I don't know if McAdoo's being petty. I don't know if maybe Manning said something to him behind the scenes, or if Manning's big, you know, let's go win one rant in that game a couple of weeks ago you know, included McAdoo or maybe took shots at him, but that's ugly. It's a really ugly situation there with the Giants, and I don't know, you know, what effect that has on the field. I mean, do the veterans actually show up and play for this team this week? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough call for me as well to determine. I think if you were going to go away from Eli Manning, you needed to do that several weeks ago, you know, and make that move. And I think doing this at this point when you don't have a chance to make the playoffs, when you're not going anywhere right now, you know, doing that and kind of pretty much almost ending his career, Eli's career for him in New York with a coach that's probably not going to be there next year, you know, that was just the worst way to handle this. I mean, you know, and I think Eli's contract goes through another year, but I mean, he can't want to come back after this. I mean, and I think Eli is one of those guys that, you know, because his father played in the league and obviously his brother, he's one of those old school guys. He is very well aware of NFL history and whatnot. And, you know, he was a guy that it seemed to me wanted to finish his career where he started it. And, you know, now he's got to be looking at the landscape across the league and saying, well, maybe there's a couple places for me to land here. I mean, you got a guy who probably, and he's the ultimate debate because he's not a clear-cut Hall of Famer, but he's not a clear-cut no either. I mean, when a guy has won two Super Bowls in a big market, you know, there's a chance he gets the benefit of the doubt, but to have this end in a borderline Hall of Fame career like this, you know, I know a lot of the former Giants that he played with have kind of had his back on social media, and I don't know how that team is going to react anyway. I mean, you know, McAdoo didn't discipline Odell Beckham. You know, he's afraid of Beckham. He didn't discipline him when he should have. And I think, you know, the locker room sees that, you know, to say, hey, you're not going to discipline this guy, but yet you're going to sit a two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback for Geno Smith. That gets to a locker room, I think. And they can see that. And, you know, when we were talking about the Redskins earlier, I mean, the Giants, you could see that they just have nothing. And you almost feel bad for Eli a little bit because they have no running game. The receivers drop balls and all the time on him. And the offensive line, I mean, that last play where, you know, they got the strip sack fumble, I mean, Eric Flowers has been off and on a turnstile at left tackle for the Giants for the past couple seasons. So, I mean, you know, you don't know what kind of effort the Giants are going to have. I mean, at least the Raiders seemingly have a pulse, you know, because Kansas City has really come back to them in that division when they were undefeated. And now I think they're like 6-5. You know, the Raiders are thinking, hey, as bad as we've had it, you know, we still got a chance at this thing. So, I mean, I couldn't take the Giants.
No, and McAdoo had a big coaching blunder last week again, and this is a guy that's just looked like he's been in over his head for the last 2 years, and it's sad because the Giants, you know, kind of unceremoniously pushed Tom Coughlin out the door too, and then now to do this with Eli Manning as well. I mean, Eli Manning's worked with this guy for 4 years. He was the OC for 2 years before he was the head coach. It's sad. It's a sad state of affairs to see what's going on there, and you know, it's a little bit different than to draw an NHL parallel of a situation with Shane Doan in Arizona, where Shane Doan, you know, wanted to retire a Coyote and did wind up doing that. But they were a team that was very clearly going into rebuild mode, and the dynamics are just different in the NHL. In the NFL, if you're rebuilding but you've got a veteran quarterback that can help out whoever you draft or, you know, whatever young quarterback you trade for, that's a good thing. It's like Eli's like having an extra coach there on the sideline. You know, if you want to go through this rebuild process, and you're going to need another coach because McAdoo is going to get fired. But man, when I saw that come across the wire yesterday, I was dumbfounded. I can't believe, you know, that you could treat a player that's meant so much to this franchise and take the Hall of Fame debate out of it. Take the fact that, you know, a lot of people say Eli had potential to be a lot better, and he probably did. I mean, what this guy's done for that team, and then to be treated this way, by a lame duck head coach, I just don't get it. Anyway, we'll flip over to the NBA side here for a few minutes and talk about that. And, Wes, I want to hit specifically on back-to-backs here because I think we've got three really interesting scenarios here tonight on Wednesday night in the NBA. We'll start with the Miami Heat, who got blown out in Cleveland. They only lost by 11, but it was far, far worse than that because it was a 75-49 game at halftime. But Miami took some overnight money, taking on the New York Knicks here. Is that an angle that you look to play? Do you look to play on teams that got blown out the night before playing a back-to-back?
I think it's a lot better than if a team, like, blows a lead the night before, especially if they blow it in the fourth quarter, which obviously Miami did not. You know, usually there's carryover early into the next game after letting one get away. So it usually maybe takes a team a little bit to get going the next night. But, you know, Miami did take a little bit of money here. Looks like Enes Kanter is going to be back for the Knicks. He's listed as probable. And, I mean, you know, noticing something about the Knicks, in a lot of these games they've seemingly gotten off to bad starts and then have some pretty good second halves. I mean, it seems like they've been down in a lot of home games and then all of a sudden kind of pick it up. Didn't happen the other night with Will Kanter was still out, but it didn't happen really the other night with Portland. I mean, they kind of made a little bit of run because Portland didn't score for about the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, but still managed to win by double digits and had enough. You know, if I were to play this, I would probably lean with the Heat because looking at the Knicks right now through 20 games, and I usually like to use that 20-game barometer to kind of see where you are as a team because that's when I think – that's how long I think it takes for kind of a team to kind of come together unless they're a total veteran team where all the same pieces were pretty much in the same place from the year before. But, you know, the Knicks, I think, have kind of exceeded expectations a little bit, at least early, being 10-10. I mean, their season win total was in the low 30s, and they're 10-10 a quarter of the way through the season. So, I mean, my lean here would probably be Miami. I mean, I think Miami is kind of what they are. You know, they're about a 500 team. They're capable of beating good teams and putting together really good efforts, and then they're capable the next night of having a really disappointing effort. So, I mean, you know, I think that they are a better team here than the Knicks. And, you know, I would think that a team that has a lot of similar pieces in place that they had last year would come out at least with some kind of renewed focus. So the Heat would likely be the way I would go here.
The first game on the board here for tonight, game 701-702, Washington takes on Philadelphia. The Wizards, obviously, without John Wall for the next little while, and hopefully he's able to get fully healthy and be a solid contributor for this team, you know, once we flip the calendar over to 2018. But a really nice win for them yesterday. And not only that, but they were down 51-43 at halftime. So to win 92-89 as a five-point pup on the road in Minnesota. And this is a Minnesota team that we talked about before the year. A lot of high expectations, a lot of talent, but they have to find a way. They need to learn, really, how to win. And you lose a game like that to a Wizards team without John Wall kind of speaks, I think, a little bit to how far away they may actually be. But now Washington, a back-to-back with travel to take on a Philadelphia team that was blown out at home by the Cavs on Monday night. But Washington in a back-to-back without John Wall. So are you surprised that this number hasn't gone up on the overnight? Are you surprised that, you know, some shops are even showing a little bit of Washington money?
I think later today you may see some Philadelphia money, but I'm curious to see how a young Philadelphia team reacts to this because if you looked at the last game against Cleveland, I mean, that was kind of, you know, the show 'em who's boss game where I think Cleveland was a little bit up for that. You know, the veteran team who's kind of been the main dog on the block in the Eastern Conference, now all of a sudden you got these young guns coming up in Philadelphia. You know, this was kind of like, let's let these boys know who's still boss here. And I think, you know, Cleveland, you know, pretty much did a wire-to-wire job on Philadelphia. So I'm wondering how Philadelphia is going to react. And I think maybe that's why you haven't seen a ton of overnight money on them. And then Washington's got to come in with some confidence because, you know, Minnesota was making, because I had Washington last night, Minnesota was making runs and getting away where it's like every time Washington would get close, Minnesota would push it up to 8 or push it up to 10. And then somehow down the stretch, you know, Washington is able to get there. And so that might give them some confidence at least a little bit early in a game. And I think if you're looking perhaps at a first half, I don't think the first half line, I don't see it on my screen as being posted yet. You know, you may want to look at Washington. I think in the first half that comeback is going to carry over through the next night. And then I also think that with Ben Simmons being questionable, maybe that's a reason why you haven't seen a lot of movement toward the Philadelphia side. But I could certainly, you know, make a case for Washington here, at least for the first half. I wonder if there's a little bit of hangover from Philadelphia, you know, after having that confidence and playing very well and obviously being a much improved team this year, finally starting to realize the fruits of the labor in terms of trust the process. But the fact that they came across an elite team and got their brakes beat off of them, you wonder how their focus is going to be for this next game.
One more game that I want to touch on here, and that's with the Phoenix Suns. They take on the Detroit Pistons game 703-704. Phoenix with a road win in Chicago yesterday, and we know Chicago is just downright awful. Phoenix actually looks fairly decent here so far this year, 8-14, so they're still not playing a whole lot of defense, but you know, good young players, good core group that they've got there. They're trying to build something. Surprisingly, this team 4-5 on the road, just 4-9 at home. But they get that road win yesterday, and they got that road win over a team that they knew that they could beat. They were a slight dog of 1 point in that game, depending on the shot that you were looking at. But we knew that was a team that they could beat. Detroit, on the other hand here, biggest surprise in the NBA so far, without a doubt. 13-6 on the year. They like Little Caesars Arena. They're 7-2 there in their new home. We're seeing a little bit of Phoenix money here on the overnights and this morning, down from 12 to 11 and 11.5. How do you approach a Phoenix team here that, you know, you wouldn't expect them to be very good on the road because they are a very young team, coming off of a road win against a team that's on their level or worse, and I would say Chicago's definitely worse. Now they're taking on this Detroit team that everyone's expecting to fall back a little bit. Do you go back to the well with Phoenix again tonight, or do you sort of look at them and say, well, I don't know if I can trust them 2 nights in a row?
Phoenix would probably be actually my look here because I wonder about Detroit psychologically here because Detroit has kind of been a little bit of a surprise this year in terms of their start. The fact that for a long time they've had the second best record in the East, and then, you know, you have a lot of cynics and a lot of skeptics that, you know, thinking, hey, maybe – this team's a little bit fraudulent, that they're playing above their head a little bit. But then they go to Boston and win outright and win by 10 points, you know, a Boston team that, you know, was relatively finally healthy. I mean, you've had Horford miss a couple games. I mean, even in that streak, you know, I think Kyrie was out for once or twice and Horford was out once or twice. I don't think ever really in the same game, but, you know, all of a sudden, Detroit has this game against Boston where it's like, hey, this is a true measuring stick game. You know, this is a game to really show that we're for real. And then they accomplished that, and now they come back home against a team that, you know, they should easily lay over. I mean, you're wondering if this is kind of a good spot for Detroit to lay an egg here. Against Phoenix, who I think has been at least a little bit better since they made that coaching change to Jay Triano. I mean, I think that they've been a little more consistent. I mean, defensively, they're not very good, and they're very young. But, you know, they do have some talent on this team, and they have a lot of freaky athleticism on this team. And, you know, I think they put the Bledsoe thing behind them. I mean, to be 8-14 right now is actually probably quite an accomplishment, considering you fired your coach, considering Eric Bledsoe wanted out and you had to trade him, you know, to kind of put all that drama behind them in the past. So, you know, the way I would look here, and I think at least the early market returns here are kind of showing that, I would look to Phoenix here. I think, you know, this could be a game where Detroit, you know, has that proverbial letdown off that win in Boston, where it's kind of like where they psychologically now consider themselves on another level, that they beat the best team in the Eastern Conference, potentially the best team in the NBA, at least so far this season. And now they come and play, you know, one of the lower teams and a very young team. And, you know, maybe they lay an egg, or maybe they don't have their best effort and let this team hang around a little bit.
A lot of good insights on today's show from Wes Reynolds. You can follow his work on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, thank you so much for joining me, man. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Adam. Safe travels, man.
Good stuff on today's show from Wes Reynolds and also Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, two guests, two professional handicappers. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We talked college football with him on Tuesday. We'll talk college basketball with him here on Thursday. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. And then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.